Chapter 24. The Extraction of the Master. Everything in Voland's bedroom returned to the way it had been before the ball. Voland was sitting on the bed in his nightshirt, only Hela was no longer rubbing his leg, but serving dinner. Kuravyov and Azazello were sitting near the table. Swaying, Margarita approached the table and leaned on it. Voland beckoned her as before and motioned for her to sit down next to him.
"Did they wear you out much?" Voland asked.
"Not at all, Messiah."
"Sit, Hela," Voland ordered and explained to Margarita.
"This night of the full moon is a night of celebration, and I will dine in the close company of my entourage and servants. So how do you feel? How did you find this exhausting ball?"
"Staggering," rattled Kurofioff. "So much tact, so much skill, so much charm and charisma."
Voland raised his glass silently and clinked it with Margarita's. Margarita drank obediently. A vigorous warmth flowed through her stomach, and her strength returned, as after a long, refreshing sleep. Moreover, she now felt incredibly hungry. She began to gulp down the caviar greedily while watching Behemoth slather mustard on an oyster.
"Why don't you put some grapes on top?" Hela asked quietly.
"And ask you not to school me," replied Behemoth. "Fear not, I have sat at my share of tables."
"But tell me," Margot asked Azazello, now that the vodka had revived her, "did you shoot that former baron?"
"Well, naturally," Azazello replied. "How could I not? He absolutely had to be shot."
"I was so startled," Margarita exclaimed. "It happened so unexpectedly."
"I nearly had hysterics,"
added the cat, licking a spoonful of caviar.
"Who is this critic, Latunsky?" asked Voland,
narrowing his eyes at Margarita. Blushing, Margarita replied, "There is this critic. I smashed up his whole apartment earlier this evening."
"But why?"
"You see, Messiah," Margarita explained, "he ruined a certain master."
"Why go to such trouble yourself?" asked Voland.
"Allow me, Messiah,"
the cat exclaimed happily, springing from his seat.
"Sit down," Azazello grumbled, rising. "I'll go."
"No," Margarita exclaimed. "No, I beg you, Messiah, there's no need for that."
"As you wish, as you wish," Voland said, and Azazello returned to his seat.
The merry dinner went on. The candles guttered in the candelabrum, and waves of sweet, dry heat spread throughout the room from the fireplace. Having eaten her fill, Margarita was overcome with a sense of bliss. She watched the misty grey rings from Azazello's cigar float off into the fireplace. She watched the cat catch them on the tip of his sword. She had no desire to leave, even though it was very late by her count. It appeared to be somewhere around 6 in the morning. Taking advantage of a pause in the conversation, Margarita turned to Voland and spoke timidly.
"It's probably time for me to go. It's late."
"Why are you in such a hurry?"
Voland asked, politely but somewhat coldly. The others remained silent, pretending to be occupied with the hazy rings of cigar smoke.
"Yes, it's time," Margarita repeated, utterly confused. She looked around as if seeking a gown or a robe. Her nakedness suddenly began to embarrass her. She rose from the table.
Voland silently picked up his worn, greasy robe from the bed, and Kurovyov threw it over Margarita's shoulders.
"Thank you, Messiah,"
Margarita said in a barely audible voice and glanced at Voland inquisitively. He smiled politely and indifferently in response. She felt cheated. It looked as if no one was going to offer her any reward for her services at the ball, and no one bade her stay. At the same time, it was perfectly clear to her that she had nowhere else to go.
The thought of returning to the mansion caused an explosion of despair inside her. Should she ask for something herself? No, never, she said to herself. All the best to you, Messiah, she said aloud, thinking, the sooner I can get out of here, the sooner I can get to the river and drown myself.
Sit,
Voland commanded suddenly. She sat down.
Isn't there anything you wish to say before you go?
No, Messiah, Margarita replied proudly, except that if you still need me, I shall be glad to perform any service you ask. I am not the least bit tired and had a lot of fun at the ball. If it had gone on longer, I would have gladly offered up my knee to thousands more gallows birds and murderers. Margarita gazed at Voland through a haze, for her eyes had welled up with tears.
Exactly. You are absolutely right,
Voland shouted in a fearsome, hollow voice.
That is how it must be.
That is how it must be, his entourage echoed.
We have been testing you, Voland continued. Never ask anything of anyone. Nothing, never, particularly of those who are more powerful than you. They will offer it themselves deliver. Sit, proud woman.
Voland tore the heavy robe from Margarita's shoulders, and she again found herself sitting next to him on the bed.
And so, Margot, what is it you would like for your services as my hostess tonight? Speak freely, for I have made you the offer.
Margarita's heart beat faster. I want my lover, the master, returned to me right now, this instant, Margarita said, and her face contorted in a spasm. A gust of wind burst into the room, flattening the candle flames. The heavy curtain drew aside, and the window opened. A full midnight moon, not a waning morning moon, hung far up in the sky. A shawl of green light fell on the floor from the windowsill. In it appeared Ivan's nighttime visitor, he who called himself the Master. He was in his hospital garb, a gown, slippers, and the black cap he never parted with. His unshaven face twitched in a grimace, and he glanced fearfully and insanely at the candle flames as the moonlight boiled around him. Margarita recognized him at once. She moaned, clasped her hands, and ran towards him. She kissed him on the forehead and on the lips, pressing against his stubbly cheek, and the tears she had restrained for so long now poured down her face. She said only one word, meaninglessly repeating it over and over. You, you, you. The master pushed her away and said in a hollow voice, Don't cry, Margot. Don't torment me. I am seriously ill. He peered at those sitting in the room. I am scared, Margot. I am hallucinating again. Margarita whispered, No, 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 don't be afraid. I'm here. I'm here. Korofiov deftly and inconspicuously pushed a chair towards the master, who sank onto it. Margarita fell to her knees, pressed against the sick man's side, and froze in that position. In her excitement, she did not notice that she was no longer naked, but wearing a black silk cloak. The patient lowered his head and stared at the floor with his sick, gloomy eyes.
Yes, Voland said after a brief silence. They really worked a number on him. Give the man something to drink, knight, he ordered Korofiov.
The sick man took the glass and drank its contents. But then his hand twitched and the empty glass shattered on the floor by his feet.
It's for good luck, Korofiov whispered to Margarita. Look, he's coming to already.
Indeed. The sick man's gaze became less savage and disturbed. But is it really you, Margot? Asked the moonlit guest.
Have no doubt it's me, Margarita replied.
More, Voland ordered.
After the master had emptied the second glass, his eyes became lively and conscious.
Now that's better, Voland said. Let us talk. Where did you just come from?
A madhouse. I am mentally ill. This was too much for Margarita to bear.
Horrible words! Know that he's a master messiah! Cure him! He is worth it!
Do you know who you are talking to?
Voland asked the visitor.
I do. That boy, Ivan Homeless, was my neighbour in the mental hospital. He told me about you.
But of course, Voland replied. I had the pleasure of meeting this young man at Patriarch's Ponds. He nearly drove me mad trying to prove I did not exist. But you believe that it is really I, don't you?
I don't seem to have any choice, said the visitor. Though, of course, it would be far more comforting to consider you the fruit of my hallucinations. Forgive me, the master added, catching himself.
Well, if it comforts you, then do so. Voland said politely.
No, no, Margarita said fearfully, and shook the master by his shoulder. Come to your senses. It really is him before you.
The cat put in his word here as well.
Actually, I do happen to resemble a hallucination. Kindly note my silhouette in the moonlight.
The cat climbed into the shaft of moonlight and wanted to keep talking, but was asked to be quiet.
Very well. A sharp silent... he replied. I shall be a silent hallucination.
Tell me, why does Margarita call you a master?
Voland asked. The man smirked and said, a forgivable weakness. She thinks too highly of the novel I wrote.
What about?
It is a novel about Pontius Pilate.
Let me see it.
Voland stretched out his hand, palm upwards. I cannot do that, unfortunately, because I burned it in the furnace.
Forgive me, I don't believe that, said Voland. Manuscripts do not burn.
He turned to Behemoth and said,
Hey, Behemoth, hand me that novel, will you?
The cat instantly jumped up from his seat, and everyone saw that he had been sitting on a thick pile of manuscripts. With a bow, the cat handed the top copy to Voland. Margarita trembled and shouted,
There's the manuscript! There it is!
She dashed to Voland and added in awe,
Omnipotent! Omnipotent!
Voland took the copy of the manuscript that had been handed to him, turned it, and put it aside. Then, unsmilingly, he stared at the master.
Well, it's all clear now.
Voland said, tapping his long finger on the manuscript.
Exceedingly clear,
the cat confirmed.
The gist of this opus is quite obvious to me now. What do you say, Azazello?
He inquired of the silent Azazello.
I say that we ought to drown you.
Be merciful, Azazello,
the cat replied.
And don't put such thoughts in my master's head.
Well, Margarita, Voland resumed the conversation. Speak. What is it you two need?
Margarita's eyes flashed. I ask you to return us to the basement apartment in the alley of the Arbat. Let the lamp burn, and let everything be as it once was.
The master laughed, grasped Margarita's disheveled curls, and said, Do not listen to the poor woman, Messiah. Another man already lives in that basement. Besides, nothing can ever be as it was.
He pressed his cheek against his companion's head, hugged Margarita, and muttered,
Poor dear, poor dear.
It cannot, you say?
Voland asked.
That is true, but we will try nonetheless.
And he said,
Azazello.
A confused and nearly delirious man fell from the ceiling. He was dressed in his underwear, but carried a suitcase and had a hat on for some reason. The man was shaking and cowering in fear.
Mogaric?
Azazello asked of the man who had fallen from the sky.
Aloysius, Mogaric,
the man replied, trembling.
Upon reading Latunsky's article about this man's novel, did you or did you not write a report claiming that he was keeping illegal literature?
The visitor turned blue, and tears of repentance burst from his eyes.
You wanted to move into his rooms?
A furious, cat-like hissing came from the dark, and Margarita sank her nails into Aloysius Mogaric's face, wailing,
Know what a witch can do!
Korovyov dragged Margarita away.
I put in a bath,
cried the bloodied Mogaric, and then started babbling utter nonsense.
The whitewash alone, the acid treatment.
You put in a bath! Excellent!
Azazello approved.
He'll need to take baths!
And then he shouted,
Out!
Mogaric turned upside down in mid-air and flew out of Volan's bedroom through the open window. The master's eyes bulged and he whispered,
I dare say this beats anything Ivan described.
Completely shocked, he looked around and finally said to the cat,
Forgive me, but was it you, mister?
Sir? He stumbled, unsure of how to address the cat.
Sir, are you the same cat who tried to board the tram?
I am,
the flattered cat confirmed and added.
It's nice to hear someone address a cat so politely. Cats are usually addressed quite familiarly, even though no cat has ever fraternised with anyone.
For some reason, I get the impression that you aren't exactly a cat, the master replied hesitantly. They'll look for me in the hospital, he added timidly to Volant.
But what will they look for?
Korofyov soothed, and various papers and folders appeared in his hand.
Your case file?
Yes. Korofyov tossed the case file in the fireplace.
No papers, no man, he said with satisfaction. And is this your landlord's tenant register?
Yes.
Who is registered here? Aloysius Mogaric.
Korofyov blew on the page of the register.
There. Not only is he gone, mind you, but he was never there.
The ring notebook evaporated from Korofyov's hands.
And there it goes, already back in the landlord's desk.
You put it well, said the master, amazed by Korofyov's efficiency. No papers, no man. And that's exactly what I don't have. I don't have any papers.
Forgive me, Korofyov exclaimed. This must be one of your hallucinations, for they are right here.
And Korofyov handed the master his papers. Then he rolled his eyes and whispered sweetly to Margarita.
And here are your belongings, Margarita Nikolaevna.
He handed Margarita the singed notebook, the dried rose, the photograph, and, with particular care, the bank book.
10,000, just as you deposited Margarita Nikolaevna. We have no need for others' property.
Then, turning to Volant, he reported respectfully,
That is all, Messiah.
No, not all, Volant replied, turning away from his globe.
What would you have me do with your entourage, dearest Donna? I have no need for it personally.
Then Natasha ran through the open door, naked as before. She wrung her hands and shouted to Margarita,
Be happy, Margarita Nikolaevna!
What do you want, Natasha?
Margarita asked.
You should go back to the mansion.
Margarita Nikolaevna, darling, Natasha pleaded, falling to her knees. Ask them. If I could stay a witch, I don't want to go back to the mansion. Monsieur Jacques proposed to me last night at the ball.
Natasha opened her fist, revealing some gold coins. Margarita directed a questioning look at Volant. He nodded.
Natasha threw herself at Margarita's neck, gave her a resounding kiss, and flew out of the window with a victorious shout. Nikolai Ivanovich now stood in place of Natasha. He had regained his human appearance, but looked quite grim and even irritated.
"Now, here's someone I'll be glad to let go," said Volant, looking at Nikolai Ivanovich in disgust. "Exceptionally glad. So out of place he is here."
I request to be issued a document,"
Nikolai Ivanovich said with great insistence, gazing round savagely, "detailing my whereabouts last night."
"For what purpose?"
the cat asked sternly.
"For the purpose of presenting it to my spouse and to the police," Nikolai Ivanovich said firmly.
"We don't normally hand out documents,"
said the cat, frowning.
"But very well, in your case, we'll make an exception."
And before Nikolai Ivanovich could come to his senses, the naked Heller was already sitting at a typewriter while the cat dictated.
"This is to certify that the bearer, Nikolai Ivanovich, has spent the aforementioned night at Satan's Ball, having been summoned there as a means of conveyance. Put a bracket there, Heller. In the bracket, write Hog. Signed, Behemoth."
"And the date?"
Nikolai Ivanovich squeaked.
"No date. The date would invalidate the document,"
the cat replied, scribbling his signature on the paper. He obtained a seal from somewhere, blew on it formally, stamped the word "paid" on the paper, and handed it to Nikolai Ivanovich. Then Nikolai Ivanovich vanished without a trace, and a new man appeared unexpectedly in his place.
"Who is this now?"
Boland asked distastefully, shielding his eyes from the candlelight. Varyonika hung his head, sighed, and said quietly,
"Oh, let me go. I'm not cut out to be a vampire. I nearly did in Rimsky that evening with Heller, and I'm just not that bloodthirsty. Let me go."
"What's this nonsense?" Volant asked, frowning. "Who's Rimsky? What's this rubbish?"
"Don't concern yourself with this, Messiah,"
Azazello replied and turned to Varyonika.
"Don't be rude on the phone. Don't lie on the phone. Is that clear? Are you going to stop?"
Varyonika went giddy with joy. His face lit up and he started to babble without realising what he was saying.
"My sincerest, that is, I would like to say, Your Majesty, right after dinner."
Varyonika pressed his hands to his heart and gazed at Azazello pleadingly.
"Very well, go home,"
the latter said, and Varyonika melted into the air.
"Now, leave me alone with these two," Volant commanded, pointing at the master and Margarita.
Volant's order was carried out instantaneously. After a brief silence, Volant turned to the master.
"So, it'll be the Arbat basement, then. And what of your writing? What of the dreams, the inspirations?"
"I have no more dreams or inspirations either," the master replied. "Nothing interests me save for her. I am broken. I am fed up. And I want to be in the basement."
"And so, the man who wrote the story of Pontius Pilate retreats to a basement, intending to sit there by a lamp in poverty."
He turned to the master, smiling.
"Let me tell you that your novel still has a few surprises in store for you."
"That is very sad," replied the master.
"No, no, it is not sad,"
Volant said.
"Nothing terrible will happen. Well, Margarita Nikolaevna, it's all done. Have you any further claims against me?"
"Of course not, Messiah."
"Then take this as a souvenir,"
Volant said. He reached under his pillow and produced a small golden horseshoe studded with diamonds. Since Margarita's cloak had no pockets, she tied the horseshoe in a napkin. Then she looked at the moonlit window and said, "How can it still be midnight
when it should have been morning long ago.
"Sometimes it's nice to extend a festive midnight such as this,"
Boland replied.
"I wish you all the best."
Margarita stretched both her hands towards Volant as if in prayer, but did not dare approach him.
"Farewell," she exclaimed quietly.
"Until we meet again," said Volant.
Margarita in her black cloak and the master in his hospital gown went out into the hall of the jeweler's wife's apartment, where Volant's entourage was waiting for them by the light of a candle. They set out, with Hella carrying the suitcase containing the novel, and Margarita Nikolaevna's modest belongings, and the cat helping her. As they passed through the front door, Korovyov bowed and vanished, while the rest followed downstairs. A large black car with extinguished headlights stood outside. The hazy silhouette of a rook showed through the windshield. Azazello asked her if she was comfortably seated and bid her goodbye. Hella gave Margarita a smacking kiss. The cat pressed his nose to her hand, and they all waved to the master, who had sunk into the corner of his seat and remained lifelessly still. They signalled to the rook and dissolved into the air rather than burdening themselves with climbing the stairs. The rook turned on the headlights and rolled out of the gate past another soundly sleeping man. And the lights of the large black car blended in with the other lights on the loud, sleepless Sadovaya. An hour later, in the basement of a small house in an Arbat alley, everything was just as it had been on that horrible autumn night a year ago. In the first room, Margarita was sitting at a table covered with a velvet tablecloth, lit by a shaded lamp and decorated with a small bouquet of lilies of the valley, and weeping quietly from shock and happiness. The notebook mangled by the fire lay before her, and a pile of untouched notebooks towered nearby. The house was silent. In the small adjacent room, the master lay in a deep sleep on the couch, covered by his hospital gown. Margarita reached for the intact notebooks and found the part she had been rereading before her encounter with Azazello beneath the Kremlin wall. Margarita caressed the manuscript tenderly, as one caresses a beloved cat. She could ruffle the pages till dawn if she wanted. She could study them and kiss them and reread the words. Darkness, descending from the Mediterranean Sea, engulfed the city so hated by the procurator. Yes, darkness.